This podcast is brought to you by Dinglemount Church. It will open up God's word to you, inspire you to love God and grow in the knowledge of Him, and challenge you to live a victorious Christian life. Be blessed as you listen.
This evening, and thanks, Steve, for the invitation. I've been really looking forward. Can you all hear me, by the way? Yeah, I've been really looking forward to coming just to share with you this evening. Before I start, before I share my story, I just want to say thank you to you all for what you're doing, you know, through Prison Fellowship, for your prayers. And I want to thank you on behalf of all the prisoners in the UK for your prayers, for your writings, for your visits, for doing whatever you're doing on some of you on a daily basis, and seeking to make a difference and seeking to bring hope to those who would see themselves hopeless. And for your prayers, because I stand here today as a result of answered prayer, because people didn't give up on me, because people like yourselves, and maybe even some of you, you know, took time to pray for prisoners. And you'll hear some, obviously, more of my story in a moment. So I just wanted to start by saying thank you, you know, for your faithfulness. You know, God is very, very pleased with you. And it was amazing. I was at Barry Woodward's Fixed Conference a few weeks ago, I think. Was anybody there from here? Some of you here? And it was amazing. There was about 500 people there, and probably half of them were ex-prisoners, all worshipping Jesus in one room. I was thinking, it's just awesome what God is doing, you know, and He is doing a great work in prisoners' lives. And, you know, probably, you know, you perhaps don't always see the initial evidence of any change happening, of any fruit. But I believe, you know, that wonderful day when you walk through the pearly gates, okay, that's when you will really see the fruit from your labour. And I just want to say, you know, don't give up, you know, what you're doing. You know, you're doing an amazing work. Okay, so as Steve said, I work for Christians Against Poverty in Bradford. I've been involved with the work at CAP now for the past 6 years. I was based in Widnes doing the work through the Foundry Church. I was on staff there. And CAP is basically it's a national charity that just helps the poor and needy, the broken in our communities who find themselves in debt, who find themselves unemployed, and now as well who find themselves with addiction issues, you know, as we've recently launched our new release group ministry. For 4 years previous to that, I worked in the Drug Rehabilitation Centre in Widnes called the Lighthouse Foundation. I was a support worker there, helping and supporting drug addicts get rehabilitated and discipled. So the past 9 years, I suppose you could say, what I've been involved in is just really serving God in the area of just reaching out to people's lives who've been ravaged by poor choices and addiction. Okay, but I haven't always been involved in this type of work. I suppose you could say what I used to be involved in was the reason why people would need to go to rehabs or access help for debt. Because what I used to be involved in, okay, took me to standing in the Crown Court in Guernsey in the Channel Islands in 2002, March 2002, being remanded in custody for drug smuggling heroin and crack cocaine into the island. And what took me to that place of imprisonment was about a 10-year period of my life that was dominated by addiction and wrong choices. So in March 2002, I stood in the courtroom, an addict. I stood in the courtroom, a criminal. I didn't see that I had a future. I didn't see that there was any hope for me. And when people hear my story, who are certainly the dark side of my story, and the prison and the drugs and the crime, they automatically think, so it's not everybody, but some, that I must have had a bad upbringing, or my parents must have been criminals, or my parents must have been addicts, or I must have been the naughty kid at school. But that couldn't have been further from the truth. I had a very, very good upbringing. I was brought up in Wales. You might recognise the Welsh twang in my accent. You know, I'm a proud Welshman. I've even got a big Welsh flag on my living room wall, which is great because it doubles as a picture of my mother-in-law. It does. So I'm a proud Welshman. So I was brought up in Wales. My dad was a chief inspector of the police of a South Wales constabulary. My mum worked as a secretary to the chief of police in Swansea. And even though their marriage did break down when I was young, they still remained very good influences in my life. I saw my dad regularly. My mum looked after my sister and I. And you know, went to church every Sunday. My mum was a devoted Christian and went to church, whether I liked it or not, every Sunday. So I was always taught good Christian values and principles. When I was 10, I moved to Guernsey in the Channel Islands. My mum eventually remarried a man from Guernsey, a really kind Christian man who she's still married to today. And it was a bit of a rags-to-riches story, really, moving from just a poor... because my mum had to give up work when she separated from my dad. She looked after my sister and I, so we didn't really have much money. My stepdad in Guernsey was a very successful businessman. He'd done really well in life. And it was like rags to riches. It was like moving into a house like you would perhaps see in Dallas. So if you all could think of your dream home, this would probably be it. It was on acres of land, had six bedrooms, nearly the same again in bathrooms. The garden was the size of a small football pitch, swimming pool. A patio by the swimming pool was like that resembled a Spanish villa. And it was very different. But I was 10 years old, and as you can imagine, it was quite easy for me to settle into that new way of life. Did the school thing in Guernsey, got my GCSEs. I left when I was 16 to go to the local college to do a business studies course because I wanted to pursue a career in finance. Finance was booming in Guernsey, lots of money to be made, and that's what I wanted to do. And my parents, you know, I wanted to make my parents proud as well. So I left school, went to college, and around this time I decided that church wasn't for me. I'd been to so many services, but never really got it, to be honest. It was fine if my parents wanted to be Christians, but it wasn't for me, and I told my mum church isn't for me. And I started then to go to college, and I started to meet up with a new group of people, made new friends. And on a Monday, they would come in to college, and they would talk about the mad weekends they had, the wild weekends, going to the parties, experimenting with drugs, drinking alcohol and things like that. It was completely alien to me. I didn't really know what they were talking about when they were using the terminology for drugs. But after a few weeks, probably months, curiosity got the better of me because it seemed as if they were having an awesome time. They were coming really happy and buzzing and looking forward to the weekend to do it again. So after a while, I ended up going out with them and I started to do the things that they were doing. I started to smoke the weed, cannabis, started to take some tablets, where it was usually at that time is Valium, Tamazepam, sleeping tablets, things like that, mixed with alcohol. And I'll be honest with you, I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the buzz. People take drugs because they work. You know, they gave me a good buzz. It gave me a high that I'd never experienced before. I was still doing all right at college. So I thought, well, I'm not doing anybody any harm. At that point, I didn't realise, you know, what the future held. Got my GMV, my NVQ in business studies, and got a job in the finance industry when I was 18, which meant I had a lot of money I was earning a lot of money for somebody my age, which also meant I had a lot more money to spend on that lifestyle on drugs. So I moved from the house parties and then moved into the pub and club scene in Guernsey and started to take club drugs, ecstasy and cocaine and things, drugs like that. And then I started to go around with people who dealt drugs, and before long I was dealing drugs as well. One of the dealers came up to me, gave me a bag of 30 ecstasy tablets, and he said, you know, you've got a good head on you, Rod, you know, you can make a bit of money here. Guernsey prices of drugs are about between 5 and 10 times more expensive than over here, so there was a lot of money to be made. So I could make £5 on each ecstasy tablet. That was £150 my first night, which I sold out within a couple of hours. Next weekend, I had more tablets. And I just saw that this was an easy way of making more money. Okay, I was earning my salary, but this was just a great top-up. I didn't have to pay for my weekends anymore. And then as time went on, the drugs that I took on increased and different types of drugs. And what happened was, really, I opened a door into a world that promised me everything. It promised me the pleasures. It promised me the popularity. It promised me the power. You know, I enjoyed the buzz of walking into a pub and club and people flocking to me because they knew that I had something that would make their weekend better. I enjoyed the buzz of the money exchanging hands, going into the toilets and all the cash exchanging hands and counting the money at the end of the night and keeping my cut and giving it to the dealer. You know, I just got a buzz about it. And I thought I was invincible because I thought police aren't going to think or suspect an innocent-looking bank worker like myself. So I thought I was invincible. I thought I was above the law. And then as time went on, you know, I wasn't just selling drugs, I was taking them as well. And it started to really deteriorate my health, especially smoking the cannabis. You know, I started to get depressed, paranoid. I found it difficult to look people in the eyes. I would walk up the high street to work, just really looking down at the ground, which meant I had to take sort of more other drugs sort of to ease that paranoia. And then around that time, I was probably 19 when I started, 18, 19, when I started to gamble as well. Went in the bookies one day and I was addicted straight away, but I bet on a horse or a dog, it was one of the two, and I was addicted straight away. And that really had a strong hold on my life. Between the age of 18 and 24, I lost approximately £150,000 gambling on horses, dogs, sports. It really had a grip on my life like no other. Not even the drugs, you know, the gambling on a Saturday would be in there from opening hours till closing hours, at work, in lunch times, after work. You know, any minute I had, I would be in the bookies gambling. As you can imagine, my family were becoming devastated as seeing their son ruining his life. My dad saw the signs of an addict, of a criminal, because of obviously his role in the police force. And he did his investigations and found out the people I was going around with, tried to stop it. He wasn't successful. And because of that, I had to separate myself from him and from my family. Even my mum, who was worried sick because of the person I was becoming, she brought on two strokes because she worried so much, thinking that one day she would get a phone call from the police saying I was in hospital or even worse, in a coffin. But they couldn't be part of my world anymore. And I became selfish and I was just focused on one thing, making this money. Then the early 20s, I got involved in drug smuggling into the island because there was more money to be made. I saw other people making the money. I thought, well, I can do that. But before long, things started to it was actually people from Liverpool who I first got involved in the smuggling with. But then after a while, people started to get arrested and caught for the things that I was involved in and going to prison for a long time. And I really felt guilty because I was involved in this and people losing their freedom. And I so wanted out of this life, but I found I was powerless to do so. See, on the outside, at this time in my early 20s, it seemed to everybody that knew me that I had everything, you know, my friends, it seemed that I had the money, the house. I had a £180,000 house, a car, job, friends, popularity, all the drugs. But inside, I was hurting. This life that promised me everything was really destroying me, and I wanted out. And then one day, a friend offered me heroin, a drug I always said I would never take. And I smoked the drug and vomited the first time, took it again a couple of days later, and I was addicted. And taking the drug really took away the reality of how much my life was really in a mess. And within 12 months of me taking that drug, I lost everything I had. I lost my job. I lost my house. I had to sell my house. Health deteriorated. Ended up going living in a squat in Brixton in early 2002, penniless, nothing, no money whatsoever. But I still owed one drug dealer money. I owed him £8,000. And he became violent. He locked me in a basement, threatened me with a baseball bat and knife, and gave me 1 week to pay him. The only way I knew I could pay him is to do drugs, to take drugs back to the island. That was my only solution. So I managed to get money together to get, it wasn't a lot of drugs, it was enough to make £8,000. So I bought crack cocaine and heroin and took it back to Guernsey. And long story short, I ended up getting caught March 2002 at Guernsey Airport. And I'll be honest with you, I got caught and I had mixed emotions. I'd never been to prison before, but I had emotion of relief, regret, fearful, feeling the pain that I knew my parents would be going through. I've just heard the news. But for me, it was as if my nightmare is over now. And ended up going to prison in Guernsey, Linnichols Prison, completely different to prisons over here. I was prison number 54. So there's only 54 inmates. I think I can only hold now 130, I think. I knew everybody in prison. They were all my friends. Guernsey's a small island, so you know everybody. And I knew somebody else in there as well very well, my sister. She was a prison officer. And she actually had to lock her own brother up at night. But it was quite comical in the end, you know. But at first, it was obviously, you felt ashamed and embarrassed. It probably wouldn't happen in prisons over here, but yeah, she used to open me up in the morning and lock me up at night. And it was quite, yeah, strange getting used to that. But while I was in prison, I had a lot of time on my hands, time to reflect on the person I'd been, the things that I'd done. And I phoned my mum up because I wanted to build a relationship up with her again. And one thing she said to me, it was the first time I spoke to her, she said, Rod, you know, as a family, I want you to know we forgive you for all the things that you've done, okay, for anything. She said, don't focus on that anymore. She said, will you promise me one thing? Will you read these books I'm going to send you into prison? Which she did. And she sent me lots of testimony books. She sent me Cross and the Switchblade, Run Baby Run, all the testimony books that you've probably read yourself. And I started to read them. I had a lot of time, you know, I was locked up initially, you know, it was about 20 hours a day. So I had a lot of time on my hands. And I started to read these books, and I started to read these stories of gang members and drug addicts and prostitutes, you know, finding freedom in Jesus Christ. And reading about how these people had lived their lives and the violence and the drugs and all this stuff that goes along with that. But then finding this freedom by the power of God's love. And I was quite jealous as I was reading these stories. I could relate to some of the things that they'd gone through. But I really wanted to experience this new freedom and this peace and this lease of life that they were seemingly having asked Jesus Christ into their lives. So one night in June 2002, I decided to see if this Jesus was the real deal I was reading about. And I got, it was about 8 o'clock lock up. And I got one of these books and I started to read a prayer that was at the end, a prayer that, you know, that the reader could read to ask Jesus into their lives. And I got down on my knees because I wanted to do it properly. And I just wanted to see really if this God was real. And I know I was sincere, I know I was genuine because I did feel, I knew that I had to say sorry to God. And I was on my knees and I was probably on my knees for about half an hour, just sobbing my heart out. I'd read the prayer very quickly, and then I just cried out, in my own words really, to God, just saying, God, please forgive me for everything that I'd done, and come into my life. If you're real, please reveal yourself to me. And as I was on the floor, just crying out, I got up, and as I stand here today, okay, nobody convinced me otherwise how real God was. I knew that I'd met and encountered Jesus Christ. I knew that I'd met and encountered his love. I felt forgiven. I felt a weight lift, as a lot of us have probably experienced in here this evening, that weight lifted off me. And I felt that peace that the Bible says surpasses all understanding. I didn't really know what was going on, but I knew it was a miracle taking place in my heart. I knew Jesus was real. I knew he had a plan for my life. Woke up the next day and I felt the same, that same peace. And I was just happy. And even my friends, my friends, acquaintances who were in there as well, they noticed a difference. And because it was my first time in prison, they used to say, you can really do your bird, Rod. We didn't think you would, you know, because this is your first time, bird being prison. And so they kept on saying that, you know, you're doing really well. It's because I experienced this joy and peace, and I knew that God was real. I knew he had a plan for my life. And I started to read the Gideon's NIV, the Bible, and I started to understand it for the first time. And God was speaking to me through his word. And I had a desire. God gave me a desire that one day I would work with addicts. I didn't know how or when. I had still lots of time left of my sentence. But I just knew that one day I would. And this is, you know, I really believe the power of prayer. Because it wasn't plain sailing from that moment on for me. If you read my book, which I'll chat about in a minute, you'll see that I fouled up and I made mistakes. But I was so glad that I knew the God of second chance, third chance, fourth chance. And when I did mess up, when I did fail, he was there to pick me up, to pour out his grace upon my life and just to pat me down and say, come on, Rod, carry on going. And it was about six months before I was due to be released on second parole. I haven't got time to go into what happened in my first parole. I heard about the drug rehab in Widnes called the Lighthouse Foundation, how they were helping addicts and the success stories there. So I asked the prison if they would let me out for an interview. And they'd never done this before. And I'd escaped from police custody on my criminal record. But they did. They let me fly by myself for 24 hours from Guernsey to Manchester to go for an interview at the Lighthouse. Flew back, got back to prison, and then I got offered a place, and the prison let me out, okay, on second parole. They gave me parole twice in the same sentence to actually go to the Lighthouse. Again, it was the first time in Guernsey they'd ever done that, and I'd never even heard that of anybody getting parole twice in the same sentence. Some of you may have, I don't know. But I could just see God at hand and God answering prayer. And it was just seeing miracle take place after miracle. And June the 1st, 2004, that's when I moved to Widnes. Never heard of Widnes before And all the Liverpool inmates in Guernsey, they would say to me, you don't want to go there, you'll end up a heroin addict again. So they were trying to put me off, but I knew God wanted me there. And I started the Apprenticeship for Life program as a student, getting support 24/7. And my time there was probably the most significant 16 months of my life. It was hard, it wasn't easy, you know, but I had good people around me, people who believed in me, people who believed that I had a future, people who prayed for me, just like you do, and you know, you're praying for prisoners. You might even never meet them or know them, but you're praying for them, you're believing in them, you're seeking to impart hope to them. And I had people like that around me, and there's nothing more powerful than the power of believing in somebody. And I didn't have any self-belief myself. I didn't believe that I had a future. I was beginning to believe, but I wasn't there yet. But then the more people believed in me, the more I was reading in God's word of how he saw me, I began to take that on myself. I began to believe in myself more. And I began to overcome just my vulnerabilities and all the emotional baggage that I was carrying, still carrying around with me, even, you know, after a year of me being that on the program. And then I graduated after 16 months and got offered a job at the Lighthouse to work as a support worker. And like I said earlier, I was there for 4 years. And again, step by step, day by day, just seeing God's goodness poured out upon my life. He promises, doesn't he, as you seek first his kingdom, okay, seek first him and his kingdom, he will add all these things to you. And I was beginning to see that. I met my wife. Obviously, she wasn't my wife when I met her. In 8.5 years ago. We've been married now for 7 years. And just again, seeing God's goodness. For the last 5 years, I've been involved in Christians Against Poverty work. And 3 weeks ago, me and my wife actually moved to Bradford to work for head office CAP. And last month, a book, My Story, called The Real Deal, was published by Authentic Media. Barry Woodward, who wrote Once an Addict, you've probably all read Barry's book. He put me in touch with his publishers, gave me a contract, and it was released last month. It's only been out a month, and it was the publisher's best-selling book last month. And, you know, my heart for the book is really for it to be used as an evangelistic resource. You know, I got... Well, certainly a big link in the chain of me coming to faith was reading similar testimony books in prison. And that's my heart, you know, to do like Barry's done, you know, raise as much money as I can to get as many books into prisons as possible. Because I know that the power, you know, of reading such testimony books has, certainly, you know, in places like prisons. So I just have gone a couple of minutes over time, sorry. He was just about to throw something at me then. And so I just want to say, yeah, tonight I've got the books, RRP's £8.99. I'm going to sell them tonight at £7. Or if you buy three, they're £6 each. And if you want me to sign them, I'm happy to sign them as well. So I just want to say thank you again, Steve, for inviting me. You know, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing, you know, an awesome work. You really are. Like I said, I stand here today. I didn't say this, but when I first got arrested in prison, my dad put a worldwide prayer request round to do all the, you know, prison fellowships and everywhere around the world. And so sometimes when you're praying for prisoners around the world, God still answers. He still hears your cries. Thank you.
If you have enjoyed listening to this podcast, why not join us in worship at the Dingle Mount Church, or log on to our website at www.dinglemount.org for more information. Thank you for listening.